Soundwords Tape Ministry Queensland. We're at the Zilmere Church of Christ for a seminar on the cults with guest speaker Mr. Adrian Van Leen. This is cassette number one of the day, and it's the Saturday morning, 19th of October, 1985. What I'd like to do this morning is to look at the influence of the occult in our society, and then also have a look at the influence of the Eastern cults and what they're basically about. Then after lunch, we'll be looking at a few things in general, including some information about our ministry. And then we'll have a look at a tape, a video an interview. And then we'll be looking at the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons. So that's a quick overview of what you can expect this morning and this afternoon. I'd like to start by sharing with you a passage from Romans chapter 1, which I think is very relevant today, and I'll comment on that after I've read it. But reading from Romans chapter 1, verses 16 to 25. If you have your Bibles there and you'd like to follow that, Romans chapter 1, verses 16 through to 25. Paul said, "I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. For in the gospel a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. The wrath or anger of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity, for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the created things, rather than the Creator, who is forever praised. Amen." I believe more and more today we are becoming like New Testament times. And many of the things that are mentioned in New Testament writings are things that are very similar to the way they are now today. For instance, it mentions there that men exchange the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal men, birds and animals and reptiles. And a lot of average Aussies would say, well, of course, that's got nothing to do with us today. That belongs to darkest Africa or pagan India or somewhere else. That's not true. In fact, quite literally, that sort of thing is happening in our society today. 10-20 years ago, people wouldn't have thought of that, but it is happening today. And the number of people who are in fact involved in worship with idols and so on. And there I'm not just thinking of the Roman Catholics. That's one that people have been trying to pull out for a long time. I'm not talking about that at all. There are many people today who are involved in the worship of a whole variety of creatures symbolized by statues of birds, animals, reptiles, and so on. And we'll see something of that a little later on this morning when we look at the Eastern cults. But the whole point of what Paul is saying there is that men have turned their back on God and have given God up. And once you give up on God, then you'll accept anything and you'll begin to worship almost anything. Also, Paul says, they claimed to be wise, but they became fools in fact. And today there are many people who think that they are wise and smart, who think they have all the answers, who think that we live in the age of enlightenment. And yet today, more than ever, there are people involved in such things as the occult and dabbling with Eastern mysticism and so on. Not the kind of thing that people would have imagined would be happening in our society 10, 20 years ago, but it's real. I'd like to share with you some aspects of the occult so that you'll become aware of something of the extent of the problem. I'm glad we sang that chorus a little earlier on, which comes, of course, from John's letter. Greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. I think there's a big danger with a lot of Christians of emphasizing or overemphasizing Satan and his power. And sometimes I have people who want me to tell them about the occult, and they almost drool, you know, as they want me to give them all the gory details while they shake in the boots at the same time. As Christians, we should not be focusing on the power of Satan and the fear that that brings. Instead, we should be focusing on the power of Jesus Christ, whose power is far greater than any other power. And when we're rightly related to God through Jesus Christ, then we need not be in fear or live in fear of the occult or anything else. Now, the word occult simply means the hidden. And for many years, what came under the heading of the occult was relatively unknown. There were only a few people who were involved in dabbling in the occult. But today it's become very popular. In fact, it's still growing. It sort of boomed in the late 70s and then sort of plateaued a little, but the movement's still going on. Not quite to the extent that it was in the 70s, but nevertheless, there's a growth in the occult. What do we mean by that, or what comes under that term, the occult? I guess it may help us if we just had a look at the table of contents from a book called The Occult Sourcebook, a book written by a couple of Australians, or at least one of them's an Australian, the other's an Englishman who now lives over here, and they've both researched the occult fairly sympathetically. In other words, they're not rabid anti-occultists, they're not Christians, they're not anything else. I suppose you could say they dabblers to some degree, and not only did they write about these things, but in some cases they were involved in parts of it. Well, Neville Drury and Greg Tillett wrote several books on the occult, and this one, the Occult Sourcebook, lists a whole variety of things that comes under that heading of the occult. Everything from extrasensory perception, meditation and biofeedback, dreams, reincarnation, supernatural and occult beings, ritual magic, ritual consciousness, the golden dawn, magical cosmology, the Kabbalah, which of course is Jewish mysticism and magic, the tarot, tedvas, magical attack, sexual magic, Aleister Crowley, Lord of the New Age, a man who claimed that he was the beast, and he made a big thing of that. It sort of built up a mystique and an aura around him. They continue to list such things as hypnotism, auto-suggestion and relaxation, trance consciousness, going into trances, out-of-the-body consciousness or out-of-the-body experience or astral projection, drugs and mystical consciousness. Some of the groups use drugs. They talk about shamanistic magic, ghosts and hauntings, spiritualism, possession, exorcism, faith healing. That doesn't only involve Christians. People ought to be aware that most people involved in the occult, whether they're witches or spiritualists, for instance, often have healing services. They talk about traditional modern witchcraft, traditional and modern Satanism, voodoo, Eastern mysticism, Eastern influence on the occult, and there is a fair amount of that, theosophy, I Ching, which is Chinese divination, astrology, numerology, palmistry, and they even mention lost continents and a few other things like inner space rock music and occult art. In other words, Here are some people who have been, in fact, fairly favourably inclined towards the occult. They didn't set out to ridicule it. They didn't set out to try to get it all closed down or anything like that. They simply described it as they saw it. And so they list a whole lot of things under that heading of the occult. Well, I think what we need to recognise is that many people dabble at various levels and degrees. Though they may not think it's occult, nevertheless it comes under it. And I guess the one thing that most people are interested in is the future. And so many people are trying to determine the future in a variety of ways. And you can use astrologers giving you horoscopes, people using tarot cards, crystal balls. And by the way, they are still used and they are available. It's not only in fairy tale stories. They're quite expensive. These things are all used by people who want to know what's ahead. Palmistry and many other things. There's some interesting aspects to astrology. It's taken very seriously by a lot of people. And that becomes obvious when you see the number of books and magazines that have horoscopes and astrological columns. People wouldn't print those if there weren't the customers to read them and to take notice of them and take them seriously. You see, it costs money to fill that valuable space in magazines, in newspapers and journals. They know that there are people who take it seriously, and so they print them. But most people don't really think about the details of astrology very much. There are actually two aspects to it. People want to know what time of the day or night you were born and where and when and all those sort of details, and they'll try to plot what stars you were born under, and then they'll try to predict what's going to happen for you, hence the horoscopes. But also people come along and say, well, look, because you were born at a certain time under certain arrangements of the stars, that determines your character and the kind of person you are. So you have people asking you, what star sign are you? And if you happen to know what that means and what you're under, and you say, well, I think I'm a Sagittarian. Oh, I always thought you were a Sagittarian. The moment I saw you, I said, there's a person who's definitely a Sagittarian. Now, she's a Leo. You can always tell. I've sat in staff rooms and schools with my fellow teachers and listened to them at the beginning of the year discussing little Susie and Johnny and Janie and Jimmy and so on before they got the details to fill out the role. And I've had teachers saying, oh, you know, little Jimmy, he was definitely an Aries. And Susie, she was a Pisces. And Freddie, well, he was definitely a Leo. The moment I saw him, and this morning when I got the details for the role, there it was. There it was, exactly as I thought, fitted in with a star sign. And so they're trying to tell you that your character, your personality is shaped by the stars. The interesting thing is, of course, that you'll get many different astrologers telling you what all the characteristics are of people born under certain stars or planets. Then you check them up and you find that often contradictions. I've looked at a few that tell me what I'm supposed to be like, and they contradict each other, and none of them seem to be quite all there anyway. The point is, of course, that you can make a lot of generalised comments about people's nature and character and motivation, etc., and most of it will fit. It's a little bit like, gossip and slander. They say if you throw enough mud, some of it will stick. And it's a little bit like this. You know, if you make enough comments about, general comments about people's character and personality, well, some of it will apply to them, and some of it won't apply to them, but that's irrelevant. People forget about the bits that don't apply. They only think of the bits that do. So there's that aspect to astrology, the people who like to tell you about your personality, and it's all guided by the stars. The other thing is, of course, that you can't make decisions until you've checked your horoscope. What's ahead for you today? And there are people who will not make any decisions until they've checked the newspaper for their horoscope for the day. And they take it seriously. Now in India, many government officials have their own personal astrologer. And they will not make decisions affecting the nation or affecting government things until their astrologer tells them, yes, it's okay to go ahead with that decision. They'll defer acts of parliament until their astrologer says everything's okay for you to go ahead. Now, it's not only in India, though. Even in Europe, there are some people who are directed by astrologers. And that's been going on for a long time. Hitler was involved in that sort of thing and had people telling him when things were ready to make a move and so on. Well, in spite of the fact that many people take these things seriously, there is another side to it. For a start, most of the comments that are made about what could happen to you today are so general. You know, if you're a Sagittarian, you should be careful this week of strangers. Be careful of strangers. You might meet one this week or today. Well, you know, it's quite possible that you might meet a stranger today. And it's always a good idea to be a little cautious of strangers. One of the most amazing things that I came across were a few columns from a magazine called Horoscope, which had a big circulation, and people took it seriously. And they have several different columns, like a first aid column. Guidance from the stars to prevent serious injury and disasters happening. And there were such wonderful things like, on the 10th, be careful because this is a bad day to have an accident with a truck. I'm not joking. That's what it said. It's a bad day to have an accident with a truck. I would have thought any day was bad, but, you know. And on the 9th, be careful of suffocation. Could be a real problem today. Don't let children play in sawdust piles or in abandoned refrigerators. And don't argue with your spouse. Particularly in bed, I guess you may get a pillow over your head. On another day, it had something like a policeman and fireman should take extra caution on the roads today. Well, they need to take caution all the time, of course. And that a whole range of things like that, which you don't need the stars to tell you those sort of things. And then you had things like certain people under certain star signs are more likely to be affected by certain things, like I think it was Sagittarians are more likely to be bitten by insects. One lady was bitten by a black widow spider. See, that's proof of it. One lady bitten by a black widow spider. So all those people under that star sign need to be careful of insects and other creepy crawlies. What happens when the astrologer who writes his regular column in the newspaper goes on holidays? Well, most people don't know, but I know what happens in some newspapers. I've talked to a few people. They go on holidays and a few of the other journalists say, look, don't you worry about your column, we'll fix it up for you. And they do. They get together and say, right, what shall we do for today? And they make them up. And they come up with the most ridiculous things they can think of, and yet fairly general. And, you know, people write in and say, that was tremendous. That was really marvellous. That was the best horoscope yet. And sometimes when the astrologer isn't feeling too well and he's had a bad night the day before and he can't come up with anything new, what sometimes they do is they go back through a month before or something like that and simply change the star signs around, put the same thing in but under different stars. And people think it's marvellous. Why? See, there's a problem with people wanting to know the future. And you have people trying to predict things, and those who want to know what's happening, their minds play tricks on them. A friend of mine, a Christian lady, sat down with some friends and they had old-fashioned tea, like we had this morning. You're all aware of what that means, old-fashioned tea? Instead of tea bags, you have tea leaves, you see. And they didn't use a strainer, so there were some tea leaves left in the cups. And this lady decided to read the tea leaves for the other ladies. And she got each one's cup and she made up a nice little story for each one. You know, you're going to meet a stranger and you're going to take a trip and all sorts of little things. 3 or 4 weeks later, they met again and most of the ladies came up and said, "That was wonderful, dear. Oh, it was really marvelous. It all happened. Would you read the tea leaves again for us?" Now, there are a number of dangers there. One was that it was all nonsense. It was all a joke. But they took it seriously. They believed it. They wanted to believe it. The lady said, "No, I'm not into that. I'm a Christian and, you know, I was only having a bit of fun." But had she gone along with it and done it again, and maybe again, the more you do that sort of thing, the harder it is to convince people that it's all a joke. In fact, the danger is that the longer you do it, the more the likelihood is of you saying, "Maybe I have got a power that I didn't know. Maybe I can tell the future and I never knew it. It's true, I've got a power I wasn't aware of." And the deception that you put over other people end up on yourself. You end up deceiving yourself as well. And that often happens. Many of the people involved in the cults and the occult initially deceive other people, but then they end up involved in their own deception. So it's a dangerous sort of thing to get involved in. The other thing is, of course, you may make, say, 10 predictions, 10 things that are going to happen for a person. Now, only 6 of them may actually come true. But you see, what happens is people forget the ones that didn't. And they only think of the ones that did. We'll come back to that a little later on when we have a look at spiritualists and a few others. But these people who want to tell you the future sometimes also promise that they can do things for you to make the future a little better. I remember one lady who particularly worked amongst ethnic people, especially southern Italians and some Greeks, and she claimed that she could improve their fortune. She had many little idols and statues and all sorts of little holy pictures and holy water and all the rest of it, and she had special holy cloths. And she promised that if you gave her money, she could wrap it up in these cloths and put it on the altar and pray over it, and then after about 3 weeks or so, your money would be doubled or trebled, and that would really increase your fortune. So the more money you gave her, the more you would get back. And there are lots of people who gave her money. $100, $200, $500, $1,000. All to increase their fortune. Because she could tell what was going to happen, and she had this power to improve things and to double and treble money through the help of her special holy cloths and the holy water and her prayers, etc. Of course, what happened was after about a fortnight, when they went to see how their money was going, she was gone. That was a rip-off. And yet, you see, people wanted to believe. And because people want to believe in so many of these things, they are used by others who know that people generally tend to be gullible. Not only do people want to know what the future has, but people want to be able to affect the future, to improve it, to gain things from the future. Say you have people who want to buy all sorts of little knick-knacks and so on that will help them. Herbal amulets put together under a full moon that you can wear on your arm or anywhere else, or precious magical oils specially prepared at the right season so that you can apply them to your body and you'll be much healthier and happier, etc. More often, you have people buying crosses, and there's a whole variety of them. For instance, there's this cross from Africa, which you have to wear 15 days against your skin, otherwise it won't be very effective. So you won't start to improve your good luck, your fortune, your health, your happiness and all the rest of it until you've been wearing it for 15 days against your skin. You have things like the Ankh cross, a sort of a cross with a circle on top. Now, the Ankh cross, according to the advertising, promises you, again, health, happiness, luck, success, love, etc. It's a famous, unique, magnetic jewel with amazing legendary powers. The Ankh cross, of course, comes from ancient Egypt and is called the Tree of Life. One explanation is that the ancient Egyptians, as many fairly primitive communities, and that doesn't mean that they're necessarily ignorant, even today, emphasize things like fertility and sexual power, because through sexual power comes life and energy, etc. Now, it's been explained that the circle on top represents the female sexual organs, whereas the lower parts represent the male sexual organs. Combined, they represent the power of life and energy, hence the Tree of Life. And I get a little concerned about Christians wearing such lucky charms. It's not a Christian cross, and even if that explanation of what it really symbolizes isn't accurate, I still don't think it's a good thing for Christians to wear. But all people who dabble in the occult know that the Christian cross, the upright with the horizontal bar, is a very powerful talisman. But they also know that pyramids are powerful. In fact, providing you make your little pyramid in the same dimensions of the Great Pyramid of Cheops, but in, you know, smaller, but the dimensions are similar or in line, and providing you line it up in the same way with the compass, allowing for magnetic variation, then you can keep your razor blade sharper, gentlemen. And ladies, if you want to keep your food fresher, you can put it in your pyramid and it stays fresher longer, and so on. There are all sorts of amazing claims made about pyramids, providing, of course, they're made in the right dimensions and set in the right compass bearings, allowing for magnetic variation, and so on. So if the pyramids are powerful and a Christian cross is powerful, what will you get if you combine the two? Well, someone came up with a pyramid cruciform of having six little pyramids on a cross, a Christian-type cross. So he was really the promise of all sorts of power and happiness, love, success, good luck, chances to winning Tets Lottos and all the rest of it. Well, there was a nice Christian old couple, so they claimed to be Christians, who wrote away for the pyramid cruciform to improve their good fortune, their future, their health, their happiness, and so on. They received rather a shock when they received in the mail, in a plain sealed envelope, not the pyramid cruciform, but some hardcore pornography. You see, the people who sell a lot of these lucky charms and so on are also into lots of other things. Anything that will get money from the gullible. And so it was a company that dealt with pornography as well as with little crosses promising happiness, health, luck, success, and so on. But you see, people do want power. Power to improve their future, power to control it. And really, that's what the occult's all about. People gaining power. Power over circumstances, power over their lives, power over the future. Power over death. And so spiritualism is something that's a growing phenomenon today. And it's an area of real concern. Spiritualist churches and groups are on the increase, and it's very easy to get involved. One of the things I like to say to people is, if you have an argument in the morning before one of you goes to work, try to make up before you leave home. Imagine how you would feel if, after storming out of the house without having made up, you come home at the end of the day to find that the person you refused to say goodbye to is dead. Now, whenever somebody dies, it hurts us and we grieve, and that's normal. If a person's been sick for a long time and has been in hospital and we were there when they died, we grieve. But we've been prepared for it to some degree. If it happens unexpectedly, we grieve a little more. If we had an argument with the person, then we never saw them alive again, our grief is even deeper. And the first reaction is, it was all my fault. If only I hadn't done this, if only I hadn't said that, it was all my fault. And you really feel guilty, and you're really burdened down. Now, if Granny died, or Johnny died, or Hubby died, it really hurts. And when friends come to you and say, look, I know how you feel, but I want you to know, they're okay. Little Johnny, or Granddad, or whoever, they're all right. They're not dead. They've simply crossed over to the other side. Now, when you're grieving like that, you clutch at straws. You don't think about the theological rights and wrongs. And when they say to you, look, I've got a friend who can put you in touch with Johnny or Granddad or whoever, and they will tell you themselves that everything is all right. That's appealing. You want to make sure that you want to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. So you go along to a seance. And there the medium usually goes into a trance. And during the trance you will hear one of two things generally. Either you will hear the voice of the person who has died and you recognize their voice coming through the medium. Or else you will hear things said that you believe only you and that person who died could possibly know. And so you feel convinced, yes, it is Johnny or Hubby or Granddad. And generally the message is, don't worry, everything's all right, it's all light, it's all wonderful here. Now you don't say, oh, well, isn't that good? Now that I know everything's okay, I'll forget all about it. You don't do that. You see, you want to make sure that it's still okay a little later on. And what about Auntie? And what about so-and-so? And is there anything they can tell you that perhaps will help you live your life a little better here on earth? So you get hooked. Now, what I believe happens is not that you hear the voice of the person who's dying or a message from the person who's dying, but that in fact you hear from impersonating spirits who deceive you, and you get caught. You can go along to spiritualist meetings, and they have church services. They have a Bible open, they have a cross there on the table, they sing hymns that we sing, they have Bible readings, and on the surface it sounds Christian, but it isn't. The Bible specifically forbids us trying to talk with the dead or to be involved in divination or any of those sort of things. I remember a Lutheran pastor coming to me and said, look, we've got a problem. One of the ladies in our church uses a pendulum to tell people's future and other things. And we've tried to tell her that's not Christian, but she says, don't worry, I always pray before I do it, and God gives me this wonderful feeling so I know it's all right. But you see, God doesn't contradict himself. The Bible specifically and clearly states we are not to dabble in those things. Read Deuteronomy chapter 11. Read the book of Acts and see how again and again people were asked to give up their occult practice, if people did when they became Christians. But Deuteronomy 18 in particular spells out some of those things in which we are not to dabble. And yet it can be so appealing, and even so extreme. Some of you may have heard of the name of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is a psychiatrist of world reputation. She's been going around the world saying to people, don't worry about death, it's all okay. We know because we have accounts of people who've been clinically dead and have been revived and have told us of their experiences. It's all right, they go through a wonderful white light and everything's wonderful. Now there's danger in that message because what she's really saying is, doesn't matter how you live your life, doesn't matter what you do, what you believe, it's okay for everybody. But one of the things that she hasn't been telling people in her public lectures around the world is that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a world-renowned psychiatrist, has been involved in a very extreme spiritualist group that used her own home. In fact, the medium lived in one of her homes. It was such an extreme group that that group believed in having sexual intercourse with the spirits. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was involved in that group. Now, a friend of hers, who was rather amazed that a person of her background and qualification could be involved in something like that, went with her to a séance. And she was a very smart lady, because the first thing she did was to look and check out where the door was and where the light switches were. And she made sure she was seated as close as possible to both of them. Well, the séance started in the dark, or semi-dark, of course, as most séances are. The medium started to do his thing, and the spirit came, and the spirit got ready to choose the lady, or select the lady of his choice. The friend of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross jumped up, turned the light switch on. And there in the centre of the room, stark naked, was not a spirit, but the medium. And you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross publicly said, "It doesn't matter. People are always trying to discredit him. He's a wonderful man. I have faith in him." And that was reported publicly in Time magazine. You don't report things like that if it's not true, because you can get sued for millions in America especially. Now, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross did eventually drop him, but not for a while. So you have people, even highly intelligent people with great qualifications, getting involved in that sort of thing. And once you get involved, it can almost lead anywhere. Now, please get me right. I'm not saying that all spiritualist groups in Australia, for instance, are involved in that extreme type of thinking or activity. That's not true. But there's a lot goes on which is unacceptable and which, in fact, is fraudulent. Every now and then you get people like Doris Collins, Doris Stokes, and a few others doing great stage performances and contacting, you know, spirits and other beings. Now, the bigger the audience, the better it is. They do what's called cold readings. Stage magicians can do exactly the same thing without claiming to have any supernatural powers. In other words, a lot of it is simply plain phony. There's a lot of charlatanism involved. Now, we have to be careful that we don't credit power to Satan when, in fact, it's just people playing tricks. And it's not always easy to spot, because unless you're a stage magician, you can't always pick how people do it. You see, people practice some of their techniques for years and years. Sleight of hand. A good magician can do things with his hand that you won't spot. But another stage magician can tell very quickly how he does it. But you see, what you do is a kind of thing called a cold reading, and you look around the audience, and you say, "Now there's a, I'm getting a message, it's coming through, there's a lady here who's a brunette," and you're sure to have a few brunettes in whatever size audience, "there's a lady who's a brunette, and she has a friend who's sick in hospital." Now, the bigger the audience, the more likelihood to have at least one brunette with at least one friend in hospital who's sick. Okay, what happens is you read body language. And the moment somebody who is a brunette and has a friend in hospital, what they do is their eyes light up. "That's me. I wonder if that's me." See? And they give body language, they give signals, and of course, the person out front is very clever, and they read those signals. "Yes, I'm getting it through. Yes, there's a lady here whose friend's in hospital, and the friend has been involved in an accident." And suddenly, the person who's been, you know, perhaps even nodding, people do that. "Yeah, that's me," you know, they nod. Suddenly the person goes, no, that's not me. "Oh, no, the vibrations aren't quite clear. No, it's not, no, it wasn't an accident. That's right, they're dying from cancer." And lots of people who are suffering from cancer, so you've probably got at least one brunette in the audience, particularly if you've got a couple of hundred, with someone who's dying from cancer. And suddenly, you know, your people start to nod again. Their eyes light up. They've got it. And so you throw out a few more feelings. And you just keep that going. Now, all the wrong guesses, people ignore. They just keep picking up the ones. "Yeah, that fits me." And so the person who's out the front reads the body language. Now, what would you do, for instance, with an older man with a young woman sitting next to him, both looking at each other adoringly? what sort of thing would you predict about them? Particularly when you can see that they're not dressed in expensive clothing. They seem to be fairly simple sort of people. And she has a number of rings on her fingers. How about this for a guess? There's a gentleman here with it's his second wife. He's got his second wife with him. See, she's young. You can tell. That's probably his second. That's a good guess. Now, she's got lots of fingers on her hands, you see, and they're not quite wealthily dressed, so could they afford to buy all those rings? Well, how about this for a guess? Yes, I'm getting the message. It's your former wife, sir. Yes, it's your former wife, and she's saying to you, yes, it's okay, dear, you can wear my rings. It's okay, you can wear my rings. And they're both all smiles. And they say afterwards, wasn't that marvellous? Wonderful. How could she possibly know? Well, she's just a very clever person. And you don't have to be a psychic to be able to do that thing, but it sounds impressive. And I've been to spiritualist meetings where they've thrown out lots of different guesses. They get a message from the beyond. And it's so general, it fits anybody. But all you do is you look at a couple of people who nod and you know you're on the right track. You've got them. Now, when ministers give sermons and you have people nodding, you know they're listening to you. It's when they go like this, you're in trouble. They shake their hand the other way. Well, not only do we have things like spiritualism, where people are trying to contact the dead and get messages for today and so on, but there is white and black magic involved in the occult. White and black magic has nothing to do with skin colour. White witches are different to black witches only in the way they use their power and what they do with their power. Both use the same occult power. White witches refer to their craft as Wicca. W-I-C-C-A. And they say it's the ancient religion, ancient paganism. In fact, in Perth, we have the dubious honour of being the occult centre of Australia, and a few years ago we had the first Church of Wicca, Church of Witchcraft, formally and legally registered and incorporated. Some years ago they tried to do it in Sydney, and the witches couldn't agree amongst each other, and their church didn't take off. They were going to start the church of the old religion. And it didn't quite get off the ground. But in Perth, they started the Church of Wicca, Church of Witchcraft. And witchcraft is on the increase. White witches claim to use their power for good, to bring harmony and health and happiness and good luck and so on. Help you win the lotteries, get promotion at work, improve your love life. Whatever you want, they'll have spells and so on and rituals to work at that. And basically it relates to ancient pagan fertility religion and worship. That does not mean, by the way, that all witches are involved in sexual orgies. That sort of dramatic stuff that the newspapers like to blow up. That's not true. Though some witches are involved in sexual activity, because again it relates to that energy and power, and they believe that helps them. Witches do not worship Satan. They don't believe in Satan as such. They worship the Mother Goddess. Now, if you want a witness to a witch, you won't get anywhere if you say, of course, it's all satanic, or you people are all Satanists. And the reason why many Christians are ineffective in witnessing is because they don't do the homework. They just lump everybody in together and make generalizations which are untrue. And so the people listening and hearing those things, they ignore us because they say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Why should I listen to you? And of course, then there are those people who say, witches, they're evil. Won't have anything to do with them. They're terrible people. They're not. They're ordinary people like the rest of us. I spent at least 18 months trying to witness to one witch. She rang me up originally and said, what are you doing about all the witches in Perth? I said, why? She said, because they're all evil. I said, all right. What else have you got to say? Well, you've got to get rid of them, as if I could. The long and the short of it was, of course, she wanted me to get rid of all the other witches so she could practice her craft without any competition or opposition. And when I paid a visit to her, I knocked on the door after making the appointment and making sure that I arrived on time, and there were about 7 deadlocks on the front door. You couldn't get in. And I knocked, who's there? And I gave her my name, you sure? Yes. Sort of peeked through the door a bit, and then undid all the locks, had the chain still on, had another good peek at me, finally opened the door. And then, of course, the first thing I noticed as I walked in the door was the smell of incense burning. And she took me into the centre of the house, and there she had a little room which was her shrine. And there was a little altar where she was burning incense to the Mother Goddess, with various representations of the Mother Goddess in the little room. And she had a crystal ball, she had a tarot card, she had all sorts of paraphernalia there. And she had a lot of occult books. In fact, that's all she had. She lived in total fear of all other witches, because she was convinced that all witches, white and black, were after her occult books. That's why she had every window wired up to a burglar alarm. She had all those locks on all the doors, and she had a light switch at the front door so that if she heard anything outside in the street, she'd throw the switch and the whole street in front of her house would be lit up. She was paranoid, lived in total fear. She made up her own holy water, sprinkled around the house, called up the 4 guardian angels to protect her, had a crucifix next to her bed as protection, and she wanted a Bible. Never had a Bible for the 20 years that she'd been a witch. So I got her a Bible that she could understand. She didn't want that. That wasn't powerful enough. She wanted the old one, King James Bible, Shakespeare in English. Not so she could understand what the message was, but that was more powerful to protect her. But you know, the thing about it was that she was a nice old lady. She really was. And she thought she was doing all the right things. She wanted to be helpful to other people by working her rituals. She wasn't evil or nasty. What she was into, of course, was evil and was leading her away from God. In fact, she said, you Christians have got it all wrong. You're always talking about God the Father. You forget all about the Mother. And she said, the Mother is where it's all at, because it's the Mother who gives birth. It's the Mother who brings new life. So you see the emphasis on energy and power and fertility. So witchcraft is very real. And you can be living next door to a witch. Been living next door to a witch for 20 years and not have been aware of it. You see, they don't fly broomsticks. They drive Holdens, Fords, Toyotas, Nissans, Mitsubishis. They vote for Labour, Liberal, National, Democrats. In other words, they're ordinary people. Now, today, you may find out that the person next door is a witch. 10-20 years ago, you would never have found out because people keep it to themselves or kept it to themselves. Today, it's becoming open. And you can go to bookshops and find books not only about the occult, but how to do it. And you'll find advertisements, usually in the Sunday papers and the classified columns, to join covens, to do lessons to become a witch. Now, not everybody can become a witch. They sort you out. They select you. They check you out. Because they only want certain type of people. So, witchcraft is real. It's on the increase. And most of the people are nice, ordinary people. Satanism is also real. And Satanists do worship Satan and believe in him and pray to him. And they believe that they gain power over other people, and they do. They manipulate people. I remember one Satanist who became a Christian was telling me how he'd been a Satanist in jail. And there in the jail kitchen, he and a group of others formed a Satanist coven, a group, and they virtually ruled the prison from there. They had power and control over other prisoners and some of the wardens. And they got whatever they wanted to get. When he finally came out of prison, he continued his satanic activities. And in many cases, many of these people, mainly men, are involved in exercising power over other people, including especially women. And if he fancied a woman, whether she was married or single, he would exercise his power and send his power and energy and thoughts out to that person to come to him. And he usually got whichever woman he wanted. And I've had women who've come to me and said, "Do you know so-and-so? We hate him. He's ruined our marriages, but we find him irresistible. We can't stand him, but when he wants us, we can't resist him." Now, those people are not Christians, because Christians do have a power that's greater. And that Satanist who I just mentioned from the jail got a job once where he was working in a one-to-one situation in a truck driving with another man. And he did everything he could to try to control that fellow. And part of it was to try to get him angry, to lose control of himself. So he used to do everything, drop things on his toes, everything, to try to make him lose his cool, and he just wouldn't. And in frustration, he swore at the bloke and said, "Why the hell don't you get angry?" He said, "I'll tell you why. Because I'm a Christian." And he said, "If you really want to know why I don't get angry, want to know a little bit more, come and see me tonight and I'll talk to you about it." And so they made an arrangement for the fellow, the Satanist and his wife, to come and visit the Christian and his wife. But what the Christian and his wife did was to contact the local minister and got the minister and his wife to come as well. I suppose you could say, well, that's ganging up a little bit on them. And when the Satanist and his wife arrived and found that the minister was there, he didn't want to stay. He wanted to go back home. But they persuaded him to stay. Now, during the sharing together, what the Satanist was doing all through the evening was to pray, in a sense, and to send his energy and power out against the minister. And what he didn't know, of course, was the minister was praying against the power of Satan in that fellow and praying and claiming God's power over him. The Satanist said that what happened was that as he tried to send his energy and power out against the Christians, it seemed to be coming back into him more and more. It's like not only going against a brick wall, but as if the brick wall was moving and pushing back into him until finally that energy and power went right back into him and he burst out crying, something he'd never done, and he left. And in fact, he tried to commit suicide on the way home. They got to him in time, and eventually he became a Christian. And he now says that the power he had while he was a Satanist is nothing compared to the power that he's found in Jesus Christ, a power that set him free and that's renewed his life, made him a different man altogether. And now, in fact, he has a ministry to people in prison and others, and he knows of some of the things that are going on and how they're affected. Satanism is real, and I could go to a number of places in various cities. For instance, I can think of Perth, where in the very centre of the city, I could take you up to little arcades and in upstairs rooms. If you were to look through the postal slot in the door, for instance, you would see at the other end of the room a black altar with a goat's head above it. I could take you into little towns or little areas out in the bush, in hills areas, where on a dirt track in the centre of a clearing there'd be a little house. If you're able to look through the louvers, you'd find in the centre of the room a black altar with a goat's head over it. And that's satanic. Satanists, and they are real, and they're active. One of the things that concerns us is the fact that there's a great deal of occult emphasis in schools. Not only is there interest in Halloween every year, which in some ways may be innocent and childlike enough or childish enough, but in other ways, pardon me, I think it's potentially dangerous. Because what it does is to teach your children that either the occult's all of a joke and it's all a little bit of fun, or else, well, it doesn't really matter. It's not serious. There are teachers, as well as books, that encourage children, for instance, to play with Ouija boards. Now, those of you who aren't sure what a Ouija board is, there's one illustrated. Simply a piece of wood with the letters of the alphabet, plus the numerals 0 through to 9, the words yes and no and goodbye on it. You have a little heart-shaped object called a planchette with a hole in the middle which fits over the letters, or else you use a glass, a tumbler, and you have several people usually, or one person can do it, putting their finger on the glass or on the planchette, and it moves around the board spelling out messages. Sometimes nothing happens, sometimes things do happen, and they're disturbing things. Often what happens is teenagers, more girls than boys, play with these and they ask questions like, who's my boyfriend? And out comes the message, Joe Bloggs. And they'll have a nice little giggle. But then some start to ask questions like, who am I going to marry? And a name comes up that none of them in the group have ever heard. So it's not simply a matter of their mind spelling out things through their hand without them being aware of it, though that could sometimes happen. The more and more people play with those sort of things, the more disturbing messages come through. I was called to a high school once to speak to a group of students who, during a lunchtime session, had gone into the television room at the high school, closed all the curtains and darkened the room, taken out their Ouija board and called up a spirit. And amongst the messages was that one of the main girls involved in this was going to be injured. And all the kids took fright and fled. They ran out of the room. One of them had the glass in her hand, and one of them said, oh, you still got the glass. So the girl with the glass went back to the room, opened the door, threw the glass in, and they heard it break as it hit the floor. And they all ran away. Some time later, a couple of them said, well, they better go back, clean things up a little and grab their folders and files and go, you know, to their classrooms. So they went back, cleaned up the glass, put it in the bin and took off. A little while later, some other students who had not known what had happened before went into the room and found that there was an eerie coldness, not a temperature coldness, but a sort of a atmosphere. And there was fluty pipe music, but the PA system wasn't on and there was no music anywhere else in the school. And there was broken glass on the floor. Now, according to the students involved, those students came after the glass had been put in the bin and cleaned up. They hadn't known what had happened, but they felt there was something wrong there, and they quickly grabbed their files and ran out of that room as quickly as they could. The thing was that within 5 minutes of the first group of girls and boys running out of that room after the seance, the girl who'd received the threat of injury gashed her head on a steel post and needed 5 stitches in her forehead. Now, she claimed that she was pushed into the post, but there was nobody there because they'd all scattered in different directions. Later that night, she used her Ouija board to call up the same spirit and ask the question, did you push me? The answer came back, yes. Without her knowing it, some of the other students at night time at their home got a Ouija board out, called up the same spirit and said, did you push her? The answer came back, yes. Now, late afternoon, some of the teachers had managed to put the story together from the different distorted things that some of the students had told them. and they wanted me to drop everything, turn up first thing in the morning, and they said, you've got all morning. For those students involved, we've cancelled their periods, their studies. You've got them as long as you need them to talk to them and try to help them. The school psychologist and guidance officer had tried to talk to them. It wasn't in her textbook. Her attitude was, oh, you've made it up, you've imagined it. And the kids said, no, we haven't, and they refused to talk to her. No good talking to her, she didn't believe them. So I was called in the next morning to talk to them, and I started by sharing some things that have happened to other people when they've played with Ouija boards, and most of those kids said, yeah, that's what happened to me before. And most of them have been playing with them for a while. And so they're able to identify with what I was saying, and I was able to identify with them. Allowing for the fact that sometimes there's a bit of teenage hysteria involved, there's still enough that's disturbing and dangerous. Yet Parker Brothers, who've produced the Monopoly game, now have produced more Ouija boards than Monopoly games, and it's a fast-selling thing that a lot of grandmothers buy for their grandchildren as a nice Christmas gift and a little game, thinking it's all innocent fun. It isn't. I visited boarding schools and talked to students and then gone along to the principal and said, did you know some of your boarding students over the weekend when there are very few people around are using Ouija boards? And I've had principals who've said, what's that? So many people just don't know what's going on. But for a lot of students, it's very real. And the more they get involved, the more frightening it becomes. There are other things that involve students, such as fantasy role-playing games, including games like Dungeons and Dragons. It's becoming very, very popular. They're fast-moving games, they're exciting. They're very complicated. It takes about an hour to 2 hours to set up the game and to get organised. There's a person in charge called a dungeon master. The dungeon master knows what's going to happen and he's in control. He, in effect, plays the part of God. Now, you have various articles and so on. Sometimes some people dress up for it. Sometimes they have toy swords and other things. But there's a scenario that's set. There's a castle, perhaps. There are dungeons and other things. You have some dice. You roll the dice, and according to the game, you come to a doorway. What are you going to do? You're going to open the door. You've got to make a decision. But you don't know what's on the other side of the door. It could be a dragon, it could be a treasure, it could be a trap. The dungeon master is the only one who knows what's on the other side of the door. You roll the dice, you decide, right, I've got to go through the door. You go through the door, and you fall into a trap with spearheads sticking up, and you're speared. Now, you're either dead and out of the game, or maybe during the game you've accumulated a few spells and potions and other things that you can now use to bring yourself back to life. Or perhaps you can call on the gods to help you. And so you're back in the game again. There's a tremendous emphasis on the occult and on using spells. They have a whole range of spells that you cast for all sorts of situations. But you have such things like many different gods, the gods of mythology. And during the games, in many cases, you need to do favours for the gods because you want them to do favours for you. And there are articles that actually state, gods are like politicians. It's a case of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. And one of the things the gods like are sacrifices. So you make some sacrifices to the gods. And they have tables of values. So that if you have a rabbit, that's only worth one. If you get a sheep, that's worth 75. A cow, 225. A tiger, 450. A man, 650. A woman, 900. A baby, 1200. And a virgin maiden, 2000. Now, you don't actually sacrifice people. But you go through the pretense of doing that. And what you're actually doing is you're building up a whole lot of values. There are games where you're encouraged to have slaves to do your every bidding. Now, what sort of a slave would you like? They have tables of suggestions. So you can pick, do you want a brunette? Or one with black hair? Do you want blue eyes, green eyes, brown eyes? Do you want her big and buxom, or lithe and thin? Do you want her tall or short? Do you want her white, lily white, red skin, yellow skin, black skin? And so you make up your own composite of your favourite idea of a slave. And the suggestions are, your slave is there to do whatever you want. Let your imagination go. And for most people's imagination, it leads to sort of a one-track line. The thing is that these games are very addictive. We know of people who have been playing the same game for years, for 7 years. Now, you play Monopoly, and you play for 3 or 4 hours, and you haven't quite finished the game, so you say, look, we'll just put it away, come back to it tomorrow night and finish it off. 2 nights running is usually more than enough for most people, and then you don't play it for a month or two. Not these games. There are people who play D&D 5 to 15 hours per week, and they've been playing that for the last 7 years, and during school holidays they play more. And we've had mothers saying publicly, oh, my son and his friends were in the garage all weekend, from Friday night through to Sunday evening. Wasn't it wonderful? They weren't out on the streets. Without thinking of what else they were doing and what effect it could have. The interesting thing is that we've got documentation from America. We haven't yet from Australia. But from America, to say that there are quite a lot of teenage suicides and murders that have been directly linked to the game. Because some people get to the stage where they can't tell reality from fantasy anymore. Psychologists and psychiatrists will use fantasy role-playing or role-playing activities for people who have problems. And so they get them to play out and act out certain things. But after they've done that, there is a debriefing. The person in charge keeps a control of the situation, and when it's over, they bring them back to ordinary everyday life. That doesn't happen with these games. And for some people, not everybody, but for some people, there's a danger that the fantasy world becomes their real world and they can't tell the difference. And they become so addicted to it, so there's a change of values. You see, there's a little thing called reinforcement. Psychologists know about it, teachers know about it, parents know about it. If you keep doing a thing long enough, it becomes part of you. You know, your tables. They're getting back to the old idea of repeating them by rote, and it becomes yours. You don't think about it. 7, 7, 49. You don't think now. When you multiply 7 by 7, this is what you do and this is what happens and therefore it equals. You just bring it out because it's become so much part of you. Now, if you're constantly involved in sacrificing people, if you're constantly involved with slaves, if you believe that normals are no good except for monster fodder, and that's what some of the things tell you, that if you're a normal, you're only good for monster fodder. It's only the people who are sorcerers and magicians and warriors and other things who are any good. Then what does that tell you about life? What sort of values are you developing? People don't change overnight, but gradually they do change, and we believe it's dangerous. There are many books that children are reading that relate to the occult. Books about sacrificing and how to do it, and some of them are very, very gory. In fact, there's a whole series of books that are coming out, put out by Puffin. And Puffin is the children's part of the Penguin Publishing Company, and they've had some wonderful books. It's been the company that's had good children's books. But in recent years, they've been putting out a whole lot of these books dealing with the occult. And they make them interesting and exciting because what they do is they give alternative choices. You read down a page and it says, now you come to a door, you open the door and you've got 3 choices of what's going to happen. If you choose this, turn to page so-and-so. If you choose that, turn to such and such a page. And then it's ongoing. And that's fun. They've got other books that are quite good with all those choices, multiple choices, and the kids like them. But they're now bringing in these occult books. And I believe it's quite dangerous. In fact, there are children who are having nightmares as a result of those books. And yet they're available in school libraries, in newsagents, and other places. we find there are many people who are interested in extrasensory powers. And you have groups like the Rosicrucians, promising you that you can have the powers of premonition, clairvoyance, telepathy, intuitive insight, and so on. If you join them, sign up and do their courses and work their rituals at home and do all their lessons, which you mustn't show to anybody else who hasn't been initiated, and you must always send them back if you give up, which is utter nonsense, but they have all the lessons. This material remains the property of AMORC, the Rosicrucian organisation, and people believe it. So when they give up, they send it back to them. You see, the reason those groups do that, they don't want others to get that material and to explain to the world what's really going on. Now, many of them use good old salesmanship and a bit of psychology to get people to think they develop supernatural powers. But it's something that a lot of people are chasing. They want extra powers. And there are people who are looking for healing. So you have people going to psychic surgeons for healing powers. I had my son operated on the kitchen table. And he's got quite a little tummy. Now, for psychic surgery, the bigger the belly, the better, if you don't mind the alliteration. Well, we had a psychic surgeon bear my son's tummy, push and prod, and suddenly there's a squelching sound and blood ooze all over his stomach, and then he pulled out a few things, wiped it clean, and not a mark, not a scratch. Then I went to a meeting at one of the universities, which we were involved in organising, and it was a public meeting. A guest psychic surgeon would demonstrate his powers, and there were quite a few people there. And they were all impressed. The psychic surgeon explained a few things, then called for people in the audience who felt that they had problems, and a number of them had already booked their ticket to the Philippines to go to a psychic surgeon over there. So some of those people came forward, and he talked to them individually, and not one of them was painted. It wasn't a stage magician who had people there who were on his side. These were people who'd come to the meeting wanting to find out what it was all about and perhaps to be healed. One of them was a young woman, and she was fairly well built, and he said, well, would you mind if we operated on you in front of the audience? And she said, no, go right ahead. So on the table she went, they bared her midriff, and he started to push and prod, and suddenly there was a squelching sound as his hand went deep into her, and then he started to pull up all this tissue. And it was real tissue. He put it in a little jar, pass it around, you could smell the blood, it was real blood. Then he wiped it clean, and not a mark, not a scratch. And she got up and she felt better. And as she walked off, psychic surgeon stood aside, and someone in the audience got up and said, he's a fraud! He's phony! Well, you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife. People froze. And he repeated it. He's a fraud! He's a phony! Well, a number of people got off the edge of their seat and they were leaning forward. They were going, how dare you say that? We saw it with our own eyes. And the woman felt better. But the psychic surgeon came forward and said, yes, I'm not really a psychic surgeon. My name really is so-and-so. I'm a stage magician. And I've had permission from our organisation to explain what I've just done. And he demonstrated what he'd done. It was trickery. So now, the bigger the belly, the better, as I said before. And what you do is, you see, you push down. And when your hand goes right into the stomach, what actually happens is, because there's a certain amount of fat, as you push down, there's a bit of a hollow there, and you can't see around it because, the flesh is sort of all around your hand. What you do is, as you push down, you curl your fingers up. You don't go down into it. You simply curl your fingers up, and it looks like your hand's going in. It isn't really. And you use sleight of hand. In fact, he had a rubber thumb, a false thumb, and it looked like a very real thing, not one of these amateur type of things. Now, he could show a clean hand, you know, no problem. And I mean, when you just do that, nobody looks or notices the fact that one's thumb is bigger than the other thumb. The squelching sound was taking the thumb off, and the thumb had inside it, of course, the blood and the tissue, which was real blood and tissue because I got it from a laboratory a little earlier on. And then, of course, you know, he tips it over, puts a thumb back on, nobody notices that, and then he's pulling things out. Wipes it clean and there's not a mark. Now, after he demonstrated, some of the people became even angrier than when they heard a person say he's a fraud. How dare you trick us? You might be phony or fake, but we're still going to the Philippines. Now, they then showed a video of a Filipino healer practicing psychic surgery. And of course, what they do is they all pray beforehand to give it an aura of respectability. And most of them claim to be spiritualists. But they pray, and people think, isn't that wonderful? They pray for God's power to heal. And so they start to push and prod and take all sorts of things out. Now, this particular psychic surgeon in the Philippines gave permission for his things to be filmed. And so he had his patient on the table in front of him, then the audience, and there with the audience was a person with a camera. What the psychic surgeon didn't realise is that through a side window was a person with a hidden camera. Now, once it was put together in film, particularly when it was put on video, and you slowed the video and you stopped it in certain spots, what you saw was that every time he finished with one patient, he sort of washed his hands, a little bowl, but what he did is, as he came down, he picked up a wad of stuff, palmed it in his hand, often tucked it into a person's briefs, and of course you're laying back there, you can't see, you feel he's potting around, but you can't see what he's doing, showed that he had nothing in his hands, went down again, and of course out comes the wad of cotton wool and the tissue and other stuff, and quite often a little phial with blood in it. Breaks it in the cotton wool, spills it over the person, pulls out the tissue, and then of course washes the hand once it's all clean, and back goes the stuff. Now, even just straight filming, they couldn't pick up what he was doing. But once you slowed it down and you stopped it, you could see every time he came up for the new patient, he had something in his hand and he palmed it very carefully. And in spite of showing that publicly, people still believed, and they wanted to believe. In fact, the same demonstration was given in Melbourne to an audience of about 500, and people came up afterwards and said to the stage magician, "We know you do really have psychic powers, you just don't want everybody to know because then you'll have too many people coming to you." And so there's a real problem. There are many frauds. If it's not fraudulent, then it's not from God. But if it is fraudulent, then there are many, many people who are paying a lot of money for something that is simply trickery, and they're being taken for a ride. In other words, they're being conned. And of course, it's nothing new because religion and religious type of activities have been used to con people through the ages. And it's here in the Old Testament, it's here in the New Testament. Religion has been used to con people through the ages. And too many people are gullible and they want to accept everything as coming from the spirit world or coming from God if it looks supernatural. We were disturbed by the fact that one psychic surgeon from the Philippines went to a country town in Western Australia and an Anglican clergyman observed him and said, "This is truly from God, there's no trickery here." We invited that Anglican clergyman, who then by then moved to the metropolitan area, to attend that session at the university on psychic surgery. He refused to acknowledge the invitations. He was not a stage magician. There was no way in which he could tell sleight of hand because he wasn't qualified. If that person didn't use sleight of hand and trickery, then it still wasn't from God because God doesn't operate that way. The healing that Jesus used wasn't that way. Jesus never put his hand in people's stomach and pulled out all sorts of things and then closed it up without a scratch. And to say that's all from God is simply to lead gullible Christians even further astray. And it disturbs us that religious leaders wear blinkers, because you mustn't rock the boat, you mustn't say negative things about other people. The Bible says something else. In fact, the only people Jesus criticised, in fact, he called them nasty names, were religious leaders who led the people astray and made it harder for them to come close to God. It's lack of Christian love, not Christian love, but lack of Christian love that keeps people silent when there's deception which uses Christianity or the name of Christianity or religion to con people. And it's time today that some of these deceptions were exposed and people were made aware of what's going on. So there are many things in the occult today that are disturbing, that are very real and very powerful. There's also a lot of trickery and so on going on. But it's an area that we need to be aware of because it's growing and there are more and more young people becoming involved. Sometimes because of the naivety of their teachers and schools who encourage them to do things. But also because sometimes people find that in the churches, they're not finding a message that is dynamic and challenging and life-changing. And so they think Christianity's empty. And when they meet someone who says, look, I've got power over life. I can do things to change life and I can help you. I can help you to improve your life. That's appealing. And people get involved in those sort of things. We need the challenge of Christianity presented in a dynamic way as the only alternative to the occult and to the cults. We're going to take a break now for about 5 minutes. Then we're going to come back and we're going to look at the Eastern cults and some of those groups that fit into that category and some of the things that they have in common. And then we'll open it up for a question time before lunch. So we're going to break now for about 5 minutes. Please be back in here in your seats no later than 25 to 12.
We leave Adrian van Leen on this cassette. This is being lecture number one, and the next lecture will be on cassette number two of the morning. And the reason we're doing this is so that each lecture will fit on one cassette.